We have been working through a series called Alive at Work, and the point is this, that the gospel changes our lives, and it changes it so dramatically, it affects the way we work. And we have been talking about how knowing the gospel changes your mind, but believing the gospel changes your life. It is transformative. And Paul, the apostle, teaches his church, in the early church, Paul the apostle teaches his church how to relate to our work, how to relate to our job. So we're walking through a series together, and we are literally digging out some of the things that God has revealed to us about work, starting with work is not a result of sin. We didn't have, God didn't create the earth, and then the earth, then Adam and Eve rebelled and disobeyed, and therefore the fall and the collapse occurred, and because of that, there is sin. Instead of work coming from our sin, we realize that God sent Adam and Eve to the garden to work even before they sinned. So it is something that God created. And here in Colossians, Paul teaches his church how to handle it, how to face work, and how to think of work. And we're going to walk through this together today. Colossians 3, verses 22 to 24. Obey your earthly masters. In everything you do, please try to please them all the time, not just when they're watching you. Serve them sincerely because of your reverent fear of the Lord. Work willingly at whatever you do, as though you were working for the Lord rather than for people. And remember that the Lord will give you an inheritance as your reward, and that the master you are serving is Christ. So here's what we're going to dive into today, and that is that the gospel, the good news of who Jesus is and what God has accomplished for us through the work of Jesus, changes how we relate to things. It changes how we relate to the people at work, and it changes how we relate to ourselves when we're away from work. Two specific changes, transformations that occur at work with the people we're dealing with, and when we're away from work, and when we're dealing with ourselves, when we're trying to deal with ourselves when we're not at work. So just to be sure, I want you to know that I recognize some of you may not be working now. You may be retired, you may be in between work and so on, and for a series like this you feel like, okay, now am I trapped here every Sunday for the next 5 or 6 weeks listening to a series that applies to other people but not me? So I recognize here today, you'll know that it's quite natural to hear a series about work if you're working. If you have a livelihood, full-time, part-time, and you're earning money, you're earning some kind of income, then I think it makes it very clear. But for those of you who are saying, I'm not working, should I sit this one out for the next 6 weeks or so? You may be a student and you're working to earn your degree. You're working towards an education. You may be in the military and you're working towards, obviously, you're working in whatever way you have been enlisted there. And you may also be a stay-at-home parent, and work in our context here means anything that you have to do on a daily basis to maintain your, or to oversee and take care of what you have, whether it's kids, people, or whether it's stuff, your house, your property, and so on. And to just manage your life, we recognize that that keeps us busy working, doesn't it? It's no less work. So when we're talking about work, I'm not specifically speaking of going somewhere, punching in, getting on the payroll, part-time, full-time, getting a livelihood or some kind of income. Instead, what I mean is you're in charge of maintaining something, looking after something, taking care of something, whether it's your degree, whether it's your income, or whether it's your home, your kids. Or maybe you're a grandparent and you're responsible for some way. You've taken responsibility for working around the house, or you've taken responsibility for working to help your kids' kids or so on. It's our hope that this series on work helps everybody. And for those of you who don't qualify in any of those categories, we'll see you in November. I don't mean that you should go, but I understand if you feel like you're going to miss out. So here's what we've been talking about. We've been talking about the idea that when we talk about and when we think about work, we have to remember that it's God who thinks far more about our work than we do. God cares more about how we relate to and think about our jobs than we do. And when you think the wrong way, we said when you think the wrong way, you might end up idolizing your work, or you might end up being idle in your work. And when we talked about being idolizing of your work, what we said was that if you make an idol out of your work, you define yourself, You often spend and sacrifice things that are far more meaningful in your life, like your personal health, your marriage, and your family, for the success and achievement that you find at work. You measure your happiness or unhappiness, your satisfaction or dissatisfaction, all based on how things are going at work. When you make an idol out of work, you find your greatest joy, your greatest satisfaction in achieving and in gaining all of the things that come from hard work. When that becomes too important to you, it has the ability to swallow you up and eat you whole and redefine you and ultimately to break your heart. Because work isn't always there. We said work is not a good God because work is never enough. It's never satisfied. It's never finished. And on the other hand, we said that there is something called being idle in your work. And being idle in your work doesn't mean being lazy. It doesn't necessarily mean not working, because there are people who are hyperactive and very productive who are idle in their work. And what it means is this: it's the failure to recognize that God has a purpose for my work, and that is to shape me and to teach me and to mature me using work as a tool to do that. Does that make sense? So we're talking about idle life, making an idol of your work, but also being idle in your work and not necessarily recognizing that our work has a purpose that God has created to serve, to shape us, and ultimately to mature us. Clear enough? The two dangers, and both of them, if we think one way or we think another about our work, we both give our jobs or our work the power to enslave us, the power to make us miserable, the power to define us, or otherwise, the power to break our hearts. And that is power that work has been given by us. And we have to be careful that we are able to grasp how God is using our work to shape us. So, if that's a good example of how we're not supposed to think, how should we think? How should we look at our work? How should we relate to and think about our jobs? How does a Christian, being a Christian, color or affect or shape the way that we think about our work? This first idea of the way I think about my work as a believer started with me in high school when I took my first job, my senior year in high school, in retail. How many of you remember Penn Can Mall? If you ever went to Penn Can Mall and you were meeting people, you met at the clock, right? And I remember working at Penn Can Mall. I remember, because I was so impressionable and it was my first job, I still remember the smells of Penn Can Mall. I can't believe I'm cursed with that. I have carry these sensations of Chess King and Cabbages and Benetton and all these other 80s jobs. And I had this job with a friend of mine in high school who was also a Christian friend of mine from North Central. And we started the job at Tom McCann. Do you remember Tom McCann? So it was my privilege to kneel down over people's legs and fiddle with their stinky feet. That was my first job, further reinforcing my belief that I really don't need to work. It's probably a bad idea. So in my job at Tom McCann, a couple months into my job, the boss came to me and she pulled me aside, and her name was Beth. And Beth said to me, "Dan, could you do me a favor? Would you and Kim reach out to your other Christian friends and ask them if they want a job?" She said, "Because having you two on my team, my payroll, I realize that I have a couple of Christian kids who come early, stay late, arrive on time. I don't have to worry about you stealing money. And you're sober. Every time you're here, you've been sober at work. I'm so impressed." So here's what she said: "I would like to ask you to consider to go get more Christian kids who will come and work for me." And I thought at the time, and I was honored to hear that. I was grateful that she thought that of me. Later on, at that time in my life, this is what I associated. I said, if you're a Christian, whether you're a student or you're not, if you're a Christian and you work, this is how a Christian is supposed to function. Come on time, work hard, be honest, show up sober. That's how Christians work. As I got older, I started to think, maybe those are not the criteria for Christians. Maybe that's the criteria for any decent human being who is taking a paycheck from somebody. You know what I'm saying? Is it possible that we started to define over the course of our lives that the Christians who are at work are differentiated by some simple, decent human behavior? And is it possible that what differentiates Christians from anybody else should be not necessarily the way we perform, but how free we are on the inside to work for different purposes, whole different purposes? And I want to be careful that we recognize that Christians are not Christians because they work hard in order to get the things that they want in life for God's glory. But Christians are unique at work for the reasons why they work, for the reasons in which they communicate or they relate to people differently. And we should ask ourselves this question. I'm a Christian. I have put my trust in Jesus. I have sensed what God would describe in the scriptures as being born again. So in my workplace, what difference does that make? What difference does that make? How does that make me unique? Does it make me more moral? Do I become the dirty joke police and I have to put a stop to all the dirty joke guy who's emailing jokes around or is saying things that are off color? Am I the one with more integrity? Am I the guy, because I'm a Christian, that's responsible for telling on the slackers? Am I the one who's smiling when they tell us, hey, guess what, everybody, we've all been laid off for the next 6 months, probably no chance of coming back, and I say, that's okay, I'm going to fully rely on God, with a big grin on my face. Am I that guy? Am I, by being a Christian, does that mean I am the one who is the most polite, or I'm the nicest? Does it mean that I'm the one wearing the Christian t-shirt and singing songs I've heard on K-Love? What differentiates me? What makes me a Christian? And I have to be careful when I define this, and here's why. Because when I haven't let the gospel I've experienced go deep enough to transform the way I relate to my coworkers and to the way I relate to myself, I have a problem. I have a major problem the way I understand what changes for a Christian who works. Let me say that again. The problem is when I believe the gospel, I know the gospel, but it hasn't transformed the way I relate to coworkers and it hasn't changed the way I relate to myself and my job. For example, I may be a believer, but just like everybody else, I'm drawn into all the coworker drama. I'm drawn right into it. I may be a Christian, but I'm drawn right into all the anxiety and the stress that goes along with performing and trying to please people. I may be drawn right into competing against other people for attention and recognition. All the while I'm a Christian, but the gospel is something I know. It's not something that set me free. So I'm drawn right in and find myself in the middle of all the drama and all the stress and all the anxiety and all the competition. I just happen to be a Christian, so I do it with a big smile on my face and a Christian t-shirt. So the question I have for you is this. Is there a solution? What does the gospel do at work in gospel people to make us different? And here's what it does. It changes the way we relate to people and the way we relate to ourselves. And this is what I mean. The gospel doesn't just make Christians outwardly nicer. The gospel makes Christians inwardly freer. And it's difficult to teach this publicly. And this is why a lot of pastors probably would have a hard time spending time on this. Because it's easier to tell people, look, the gospel makes you work harder. The gospel makes you perform better. The gospel makes you more moral. It helps you work more diligently in such a way as to perform well enough to capture the attention of those you work with so that you can then explain to them what you know about God. It's much easier to do that than to explain that, listen, the gospel works in our heart to make us work with different motives. Having little to do with being nicer to people, having a lot more to do with being freer in your heart and your inner life. Do you see how much easier it would be to say, be nicer, you're a Christian, than it is to say, no, the gospel makes us freer as a believer. And so we're going to work through that together and recognize that the gospel freedom allows us to respond differently. It allows us to respond differently to circumstances and to people because of the good news of the gospel. So the gospel, which we're going to define in a second, is at work in our lives, and it's not so much working in the things that we do, but in the freedom that we enjoy while we're working. For example, it sets us free to selflessly work, to work selflessly. It frees us to selflessly serve others with our hard work, and it also frees us from self-destructing work. So we can work selflessly to serve others, but we can also work free from self-destructive work, where we're free to rest and we're free to recharge after a long work week. So being a Christian in the workplace means the truth of the gospel should work itself out in every detail of our life. How does that happen? First of all, we believe the good news. It's not just something we know, it's something we believe. And the good news is different from good advice. Good advice is what you need to do to please God so that he'll see you and receive you. Good news is an announcement that God has already done everything necessary for him to see you and receive you. And you just respond with faith. Let me say that again. Good advice is all the things you need to do to please God so that He sees you, recognizes you, and ultimately receives you as His own. Good news is an announcement that God's already done all that. God's already achieved all that through Jesus and what He accomplished with His life, death, burial, and resurrection, His work on the cross. God has satisfied Himself and is able to see you and receive you based on your faith in Jesus. That's good news. It's an announcement. There's nothing left to do on your part. Jesus said, "It is finished." And we believe that that particular good news that gospel has given us has changed everything. And here's how it's changed us relative to work. Let me show you this. I want to slow down. You're going to see it on the screen, and this is what is it's critical for us before we go any further for us to settle and receive this and understand. And here it is. I hope you can read it behind me. Jesus' perfect performance satisfies God. And it satisfies God in our place. Substitutes. His performance is flawless, perfect, and Jesus stands in our place. And it frees us from the need to secure our self-worth through performance and achievement. I hope that that settles in. We don't have to perform. We don't have to achieve. Everything Jesus did in His perfect performance satisfied God. So now it's off of us. It's on Jesus, and we just put our trust in Jesus. Make sense? So what happens is it frees us from having to secure our own self-worth and value to God, because Jesus has already accomplished that for us with His perfect performance. And what that means is this: God is fully glorified and He's fully satisfied by Jesus' performance, and He frees us from the need to perform. That means that in our jobs, when we are trying to perform and receive some kind of recognition or reward, our jobs are never intended by God to give us that which Jesus provides for us. Significance, value, meaning, all of those things. By God, by Jesus' life, His death, His burial, His resurrection, He has already achieved for us the highest joy, the highest meaning, the highest significance, and the highest prize. And it's true that when we trust Jesus, our lives now belong to Him, and everything in our lives has new significance. God is able to see us, He's able to receive us, and everything that belongs to Jesus, He shares with us. So when we begin to work for King Jesus, we don't just change our outward behavior, everything changes. And let me show you what I mean by everything changes. Here's what Paul teaches. Paul teaches his church that God has given us a new boss. Whatever boss it is that you're currently working for, you might think of who they are. It might even be your parent. I don't know who your boss is. But think about your boss. God has provided us a better boss, a true and better boss that we are working for. Now, if you are a boss, there's bad news for you today. Jesus is a better boss than you are. Bad news, I know, but that's the truth. That's what the scriptures teach us, that we already have a boss, and the one we're working for is our temporary boss, but our real boss for eternity is someone named Jesus. Not too bad. Not too shabby. Not too shabby. Look at verse 23 in Colossians 3. Work willingly at whatever you do, as though you were working for who? For the Lord, rather than for people. Work like you aren't working for your physical, limited human boss. Work instead like your master, that God has given you a new master, a new boss, and that is the boss you are serving. So how does the gospel change our perspective on work? It changes the way we relate to our boss. So now, our boss's approval and our boss's favor and our boss's opinion only means a little bit when your real boss is Jesus. When your real boss is Jesus, that means that that's the one whose praise and approval is being pursued. But good news, He's already expressed that. He's already demonstrated His approval. And we don't have to go chasing around for the praise and approval of our boss. Now, some of you, be careful not to take this overboard and have a big confrontation on Monday and you finish with, "Well, oh yeah, you're not even my boss. I don't know who you think you are, but you're not my boss." They may in turn say, "Well, you're not my employee anymore either. Good luck finding a new job." But in reality, we can work physically and be lightly concerned for the approval and the praise of our boss, but in our heart be satisfied with the praise and approval of God the Father, who's already approved us, who's already loved us, and has already pursued us. So when you become a Christian, your overarching, overriding, life-driving assignment is no longer accomplishing your job description, though we ought to do that. But the bigger job description that trumps any job description you've ever accepted, the one that you're being paid to do, the job description now, according to our new boss, can be summed up this way: love God and love people. So everything we're doing at work now serves the purpose of helping us to learn to love God and love people. And you might say, well, how is that my job description? I have a very practical job description. There's tons of outcomes I'm being held accountable to achieve. That's the earthly boss's job description. Your heavenly boss's job description is in and through your job description and all of the outcomes and the time that you're spending punching into work and punching out or going to school or whatever. In and through that, you have an overarching job description, and it's described this way: to love people and let God teach you to love himself, to love God. And that always is the greater big picture. It's always the greater job description. And it changes the way that we relate to people. Yes, money is important. We have to pay bills, and you can't tell the bill collector that you don't have enough money because your boss is Jesus. You can't tell them that. You have to earn the money. Advancement in your career can be good, and it can feel good, and it can be satisfying. You want to help your boss, and you want to do a good job. But listen, ultimately and finally, you are in your job to learn to love God and to love people. And this gives us new confidence. The way we relate to God and the way he relates to us gives us new confidence. Many of the problems that a lot of us probably face in our job and our workplace has to do with the way that we are developing or needing self-worth and confidence. But the gospel, Jesus as our new boss, gives us new confidence and new self-worth. And here's what I mean. Some of you may feel like, I slave away at my job. It is thankless. There's no recognition. I am desperate for respect. I get very little. I'm desperate to move past my peers, to work beyond them. Because if I do that, that's how I know that I'm okay. That's how I remind myself that I'm valuable. And when we approach work that way, it causes us to slave away at our jobs, trying to validate that we're approved and that we're valuable. And then, on the other hand, there are some people who are slaving away at work and very sensitive to criticism. And you can't be coached or criticized or corrected because your entire identity is wrapped around doing the right thing and being perfect and working so hard and effectively that no one could ever coach you, correct you, or otherwise challenge you. And when you are, you flare up like a porcupine. All your needles come out. And that happens because when your identity is wrapped up in the approval of or the opinions of other people, then you can't take criticism. And when you can't take criticism, it quite possibly could be because all of your self-worth, or a good portion of your self-worth, is entirely wrapped up in your job. So here's the thing. Knowing and believing that you are loved by God in spite of yourself, knowing that gives us new confidence. It doesn't give us a new self-esteem where we're like, wow, I'm really impressed with myself. No, it gives us new confidence that despite not being very impressed with myself, God loves me anyway. And I have a new confidence that comes through believing the gospel. And you don't need self-esteem to esteem yourself more highly. You have a new confidence knowing that Christ loves you, and that changes everything. And secondly, Paul teaches us here, he's teaching the church, he teaches the church that the gospel provides for us a new and better reward, that God gives us a better reward. We have been given a better boss, but we've also been given a better reward. Look at verse 24. Remember that the Lord will give you, he will give it to you by grace, an inheritance as your reward. So now my reward is an inheritance, and that changes what I need to be happy at work. How many of you wouldn't mind a raise? How many of you wouldn't mind a little promotion here? How many of you wouldn't mind a new career? How many of you wouldn't mind just having a job? But if you are at work, for some people, what they're living for is just a little recognition. You know, it wouldn't hurt my feelings to be named Employee of the Month and get on that plaque. Wouldn't it hurt my feelings to get a special parking place, Employee of the Month, be able to park right there in the front. Everybody knows I'm doing a pretty darn good job. Some people are working for the paycheck, working for a raise, There are some people with lots of ambition, and when you have a lot of ambition, it is quite easy to work for more money, more power, more comfort, more fame, to grow my retirement, comfortable retirement nest egg. I have put all my time and effort into making sure that I am able to keep this company going long before I'm gone and pass it on to my kids, or I want a house at the beach, or I want to retire in such a comfortable position. Nothing wrong with that. But if that's the only thing you're working for to make you happy, you are setting yourself up for a dramatic disappointment. Paul says, you may be working so hard and you're trapped, but the gospel changes the way you respond to your circumstances. Paul says in the book of Ephesians and also in some places in Colossians, here's what he said, the gospel changes the way you relate to your spouse. If you're a parent, it changes the way you relate to your kids. If you're a kid, it changes the way you relate to your parents. And if you're a worker, it changes the way you relate to your job. And then Paul goes on to say, look, if you're a slave, which the Bible regulates slavery but does not condone or commend slavery. But here's what Paul says. Even if you're a slave, even if you're trapped and you feel like it's a thankless job and you're being taken advantage of, you're being disrespected, and in fact, you can't even find someone to pat you on the back. Why? Because you're a slave. Here's what Paul says. The gospel changes the way you work even as a slave. So some of you are like, well, you know what? I know what it feels like to be a slave because I feel like I'm a slave sometimes at work. Here's what Paul says. What if you were a slave? If you literally were a slave, the gospel changes your heart and the way you relate to the person who is your slave master. Here's what Paul says. God teaches us that the incentive for working without bitterness, can you imagine being a slave and wouldn't you think there'd be a little bitterness that kind of turns up every now and then? How about a little cynicism every now and then, right? Some of you are cynical at work and you're not a slave. But if you were a slave, imagine the bitterness and cynicism that turns up. Here's what Paul says. You can work sincerely. You can work hard to perform well. You can do a great job at work even if you're a slave. Why? Because the reward that you're seeking is not the boss's approval or some kind of a pay increase or a promotion. The reward that you're seeking is beyond your job and beyond this earth. It's an inheritance that God has set aside for us in heaven. So let your heart be full of joy that there's an inheritance coming that will be your final reward. Very different from looking for and counting on and building our lives around an earthly reward that comes through our work. So the reward that Jesus provides is far greater than anything the world provides. And by the way, they last forever. The Bible is full of references to an inheritance as our reward. And could I explain to you what inheritance is? Because if you hear that your reward is an inheritance, I don't know what comes to your mind. And I don't know if you think, oh great, I get Jesus' leftover property or what. I don't know what you think, but our inheritance is, in a word, heaven. Much has been written about heaven. Much has been said about heaven. But heaven is the sum total of all God has promised us in salvation. And the inheritance really is saying that we've been born into an inheritance, and our inheritance never depreciates. It never spoils, it never rots, it never perishes, it never fades. And as God's children, we've been adopted into his family. And here's what he says. I've received you and adopted you as a part of my family. You are now a child who belongs to me because you are in Christ. And everything that belongs to me belongs to you. And he describes in the Bible what heaven is going to be when we hear the truth, the word of truth, and we believe in Jesus, and we take possession of this inheritance, our full inheritance one day in heaven. We understand that the value that awaits us of what God gives us in the future, that value, we are better able to endure whatever comes our way in this life because we know something far greater awaits us beyond. Here's what Revelation, the book of Revelation, says about heaven, our inheritance. I hope this gives you a better picture of what it is. He will wipe every tear from their eyes. In heaven, no tears. There will be no more death or mourning or crying or pain, for the old order of things has passed away. God and man will dwell together. Everything will be made new. The bejeweled city called New Jerusalem will be our residence. The river of life will issue from God's throne, and the healing tree of life with 12 kinds of fruit will grow there too. There will be no night there because the eternal light of the Lamb will fill the new heaven and the new earth and shine upon all the heirs of God. And your happiness is not secured in being rewarded at work. Your happiness is being rewarded beyond your job. And that gives us new freedom, even if we're trapped in slavery, it gives us new freedom. For those of you who are thinking that your ultimate reward is that vacation house, let me tell you, the Bible says you don't have to settle for a vacation house. There's been a mansion that's being prepared in you in heaven that is your inheritance, and it will be the ultimate reward to work for and to work toward. That's such good news for those who believe and those who trust. So knowing that you work for the King Jesus and not for other people, it changes some things, it adjusts some things, and this freedom shows up in specific ways. And let me give you two. I want to give you two specific ways in which our freedom shows up with the time that we have left. Let me touch on these quick. You are free to wholeheartedly serve people at work. So what all this means is you're free, because we have a new boss and a new reward, we're free to serve people at work selflessly. We don't have to give, we don't have to take, manipulate, squeeze, deceive, or otherwise force people or earn people to do for us. We can actually, because we're so fulfilled in who God is and what He is for us, that we can actually serve people selflessly and wholeheartedly at work. Your new boss, Jesus, is already satisfied. So now, He gives you the freedom to work, to love God and love others, because all that you really need is to be secure by Jesus. It gives us the ability now to selflessly love and care for other people instead of doing what's best for us. And let's be real, it's nice to be recognized, right? Isn't that? There's some sense that if we're recognized, someone realizes or appreciates and respects us. But everything you think you need, that appreciation, respect, affirmation, love, acceptance, a sense of well-being, future reward is already yours in Jesus. Therefore, I can stop obsessing over my own performance, and I can turn my attention to love my coworkers, to love employees, to love my boss, look out for their good and to serve them, not for my own gain, to set myself up for my future, because my future is already secure. I can do that just because I love them. And I've had a handful of bosses tell me over the year, a handful of employees tell me over the year, Pastor, I want to tell you a story. And then they went on to explain how the boss called them into the office and they started to have slip into a state of shock because they were going to get confronted by their boss. And they explained that the boss closed the door behind them and said, I noticed that you're struggling here at the job. And they said, yes, I was afraid this was going to occur. We were going to have this conversation. And the boss then went on to say, are you doing okay? What's happening in your life? How are things going in your personal life? In other words, the boss somehow cared more about the person than they did their performance, and it brought life to them. And see, when you're a boss and you have been loved by God so much and all of your reward has been given to you by God, then you have the freedom to show care to people in your workplace. You can show them care and care about their lives more than just their performance. Sets you free to do that. Secondly, you can also rest from your work. You can rest from your work. Now that you're working for Jesus, you have the freedom that you need to recharge and rest from your work. How many of you, almost every minute that you're on vacation, taking a personal day, or at night at home, rather than doing something on the computer for work, have a little bit of guilt whispering all kinds of nasty things to you? Anybody? You should be doing more. What if somebody sees you taking time off? Don't post anything on social media, then everybody will know you're out on vacation and not working. And this guilt starts to terrorize us and haunt us because we're resting from our work. Let me tell you, that's something we learned from our culture and maybe the way you were brought up. But the Bible teaches, God says, I have hardwired you to recharge and rest. So you can do 6 days of phenomenal work, but you have been given natural boundaries to retreat, to recharge and rest, and to not be loaded down with guilt about the healthy rhythm that you have developed of work and rest. God worked for 6 days on creation, and the Bible tells us on the seventh day, what did He do? He rested. God granted the Israelites rest from their enemies in the promised land and said, here in the promised land, you will enjoy rest, and you will enjoy milk and honey. You will enjoy a reward for all of the years in which you have been in exile. Jesus, when He was finished with His work on earth, sat down at the right hand of the Father. Did He need to? Probably not. He's the creator of the universe. But He sat down. They demonstrated that there's a rhythm and a routine of work and rest, work and rest. You should not feel guilty. Gospel people don't feel guilty about taking time off of work. Gospel people are energized by taking time off from work. When I was when I first became a full-time church leader, as I was pastoring my first couple of years, I kind of was feeling around to see how do the leaders that I respect, how do they rest? How do they take time off? And I started to ask around, and I asked one particular gentleman, I said, "Hey, do you take a day off? And if so, what day do you take off?" And he said, "I don't take a day off." I said, "You don't? Why don't you take a day off?" He said, "Satan doesn't take a day off." I was like, "So let me get this straight. You're Jesus then? Because I leave that job to Jesus. Look, if the devil doesn't take a day off, I'm not going to take a day off. Who do we think we are? Who do we think we are? God has created us to work hard and to rest. And if we're idle in our work, then we live for rest. We're looking for ways to take advantage of the company, to extend our breaks, to sneak away undetected because we're idle in our work. But when you idolize work, rest becomes an irritant. I know people who will say things like, "I have not taken a vacation in. I don't take a lunch break when. I never take my breaks because." And I understand how that works. And the idea is this. My lack of rest is a tribute to my hard work, and I wear it like a badge of honor. You have to be careful with that. It's not a natural routine. And I would be willing to bet that most people who have a good day off and a good vacation and a good rest and recharge are actually better employees the rest of the week. I submit that to you. Try it if you haven't been trying. But those who idolize their work oftentimes feel like rest keeps me from achieving my goals. It's a speed bump on my road to success. It's an irritant. But God knows our limits. He's designed our limits. And you can trust him. And some of you might just simply start this way, and that is establishing a Sabbath day, a day of rest. For many of you, it has become Sunday because it's natural for the way that our culture works. But for others, it could be a day of rest, and your day of rest may not work out on Sunday. It may have to be another day. But God has programmed our bodies. How many of you ever wondered why it is that our bodies know when it's Sunday at 2 o'clock and it just quits? And you have not scheduled a nap, but your body says, "Oh yeah, I'm napping." Right? Somehow, our bodies are programmed to kind of start to wind down on Sunday afternoon. And I have to remind my teenage girls, look, my body's programmed to rest. I don't know what yours is programmed to do, but I have an autopilot that just shifts into nap mode. And then after that, you have my attention. My body just kind of says it's nap time. There's a routine that we can develop for ourselves that allows ourselves to get away guilt-free and rest. Why? Because gospel people enjoy recharging and rest. You know what? Can you imagine what Chick-fil-A's owners, the Kathy family who owns Chick-fil-A, can you imagine them pitching to their investors that they're going to close down their fast food business on Sundays? Can you imagine them saying, "There's no way that's going to work. You cannot be profitable. If you're a fast food business, by the way, if you're a Christian business selling Christian chicken to Christian people, the best time to sell it is after church because Christians can eat, but especially on Sundays." Which, by the way, waffle fries and Chick-fil-A helps you nap better Sunday afternoon. Try that. But can you imagine the Kathy family being putting this out there that they're going to close down on Sundays? And there's no doubt in my mind, investors said, "This is not going to work. This is going to fail." You cannot close down. Why? Because the revenues, a profit is on the line. It's not a sustainable business model. Here's what they said. "We believe that God has hardwired us to rest. We believe we're going to model it from the top down, and we're not going to allow any of our employees to work on Sunday because we believe this is the way God made us to function." We don't know what they're going to do with their day of rest, but as a company, we're going to model what we believe is the way that God created us. And as gospel people, we should take gospel days in which we have gospel rest, deep rest, to recharge and do it guilt-free. And that allows us to work as hard as we need to work in between time. And because ultimately, here's what we discover, our identity and our reward have already been secured for us by Jesus. And we are now free to work differently than other people. So remember I said at the very beginning, we're not just gospel people in that we work better or we're more well-behaved or that we are better trusted or we are actually harder working or that we're nicer. Now, all of that stuff is terrific. But the real power of gospel people at work is that we're freer. Freer to love people selflessly. Freer to rest and recharge. Freer to live like God has given us a new boss and a new reward. Do you see what I'm saying? It's not it's not the power to perform better. As Christians, we've been given the freedom to work for all different motives and all different reasons, even if it means starting to develop for yourself a day of rest, a Sabbath day in which you say, I'm not working, I can't work, I won't work. And you might say, well, it's going to cost me revenue, it's going to cost me profit, it's going to cost me income. Whatever you sacrifice in income and profitability, you are going to multiply tenfold by doing it God's way and resting yourself the way that you're supposed to. Would you join me in prayer this morning? Father, as we approach you today, we're so grateful that you have addressed our hearts. You didn't just make more demands on us to be better workers, to be more to work in a way that's more impressive to our bosses, but instead you said, I'm the boss. And I have brought new meaning and new significance and new freedom in your work. And I wonder, North Central Church family, whether I know you or not, whether I'm familiar with you or not quite yet, I wonder if you would respond this morning by raising your hand and saying, Pastor, I need God to help me work differently because work is costing me in ways that it shouldn't. Would you raise your hand and say, Pastor, would you pray for me? My job is wearing me out. It is causing me all kinds of distress. I need gospel freedom. Would you raise your hand? I need gospel freedom. I need to be renewed. I need to rest. I need new selflessness. I need freedom in my work. God, you see the hands that are raised. You know that our people are in need of unique work deep in their heart. And I pray that you would work, not necessarily to change their circumstances, but to address the heart of someone who feels enslaved. Help them to see their unique and dramatic and valuable reward that has been set aside for them in heaven. Help them, God, to withdraw from an earthly perspective and help them to see what you see. I pray that you give them healing in their relationships at work, that you give them healing in the way they relate to themselves. We trust you to do it. We pray in Jesus' name. Amen. Would you stand? We're going to sing songs of celebration. I invite you to join us and sing from your heart together.